You're listening to The Philosopher's Note on Smarter, Faster, Better. More wisdom in less time.
Hi, this is Brian. Welcome to The Philosopher's Note on Smarter, Faster, Better. The Secrets of Being Productive in Life and Business by Charles Duhigg. As always, let's kick it off with a quote. We now know how productivity really functions. We know which choices matter most and bring success within closer reach. We know how to set goals that make the audacious achievable, how to reframe situations so that instead of seeing problems, we notice hidden opportunities, how to open our minds to new, creative connections, and how to learn faster by slowing down the data that is speeding past us. This is a book about how to recognize the choices that fuel true productivity. It is a guide to the science, techniques, and opportunities that have changed lives. There are people who have learned how to succeed with less effort. There are companies that create amazing things with less waste. There are leaders who transform the people around them. This is a book about how to become smarter, faster, and better at everything you do. End quote. That is Charles Duhigg from Smarter, Faster, Better. Charles Duhigg wrote the best-selling book, The Power of Habit, see those notes, in which he walked us through the science of building better habits. In this book, he walks us through the science of being productive so we can be smarter, faster, and better at everything we do. I'll take it. It's a great book packed with fascinating stories and practical applications. We get to learn about everything from how the Marines reimagined boot camp to how Disney moved through creative roadblocks to create Frozen. The book has 8 chapters: motivation, teams, focus, goal setting, managing others, decision making, innovation, and absorbing data. It's packed with big ideas, and I'm excited to share a few of my favorites. So let's jump straight in. First big idea, step number 1. Motivation. Quote, the choices that are most powerful in generating motivation, in other words, are decisions that do 2 things. They convince us we're in control, and they endow our actions with larger meaning. Choosing to climb a mountain can become an articulation of love for a daughter. Deciding to stage a nursing home insurrection can become proof that you're still alive. An internal locus of control emerges when we develop a mental habit of transforming chores into meaningful choices, when we assert that we have authority over our lives. End quote. So the first chapter is on motivation. If we want to be productive, we need to start by being motivated. The 2 keys to motivation that Charles talks about? 1, we need to feel a sense of control, and 2, we need to make our actions meaningful. First, the control. Charles walks us through the science of our locus of control. We have 2 options, internal or external. People with an internal locus of control tend to praise or blame themselves for success or failure. A student who does well on a test attributes their success to their hard work rather than their intelligence. A salesperson who loses a deal blames himself for failing to hustle rather than bad luck. People with an external locus of control do the opposite. They believe that their success or failure is largely determined by things outside their control. Where you put your locus of control matters a lot. People with an internal locus of control tend to be happier, make more money, stay married longer, and experience more of all the things we want. Those with an external locus of control are more stressed and less happy. Charles uses the same Carol Dweck research we talk about in many of these notes, see Mindset and Self Theories, to bring his point home on locus of control. Remember that one study where kids took a test and were either told they did well because they were smart or because they worked hard? The ones who were told they did well because they worked hard went on to outperform the smart group. We describe that as growth versus fixed mindset in that context. In this context, the growth mindset equals an internal locus of control. You did well because you worked hard, which is something you can control, while the fixed mindset equals an external locus of control. You did well because you're smart. That's not something most people think they can control directly. The quickest way to move your control inside is to make choices. That's how the Marines reimagined their boot camp and how senior citizens extended lifespan. Little choices matter. Make them. part two to enhancing motivation in this context is to create meaning. Remind yourself why you are doing what you are doing. Make the connection to what you're doing and what's important to you all the time. Next big idea, focus plus mental models. Quote, researchers have found similar results in dozens of other studies. People who know how to manage their attention and who habitually build robust mental models tend to earn more money and get better grades. Moreover, experiments show that anyone can learn to habitually construct mental models. By developing a habit of telling ourselves stories about what's going on around us, we learn to sharpen where our attention goes. These storytelling moments can be as small as trying to envision an upcoming meeting while driving to work, forcing yourself to imagine how the meeting will start, what points you will raise if the boss asks for more comments, what objections your coworkers are likely to bring up, etc. Or they can be as big as a nurse telling herself stories about what infants ought to look like as she walks through NICU. End quote. That's from a chapter on focus, in which we learn about the perils of cognitive tunneling, when our minds become ineffectively focused on meaningless information and prevent us from doing our best work. The issue with cognitive tunneling is that our mind goes from being kind of sort of lazily off to instantly on in a moment's notice. The spotlight of our attention shines too brightly on certain stimuli while ignoring other stuff. A mundane example of that is being sucked into your smartphone and ignoring everything else going on. Charles shares the dramatic story of a plane crash and how this happened and juxtaposes it with another near crash that was averted because the pilots had constructed mental models and kept their minds on. We come back to the importance of our attention again and again in these notes for the very simple reason that our ability to put our mind where we want, when we want, is the hallmark of creativity, happiness, and all things awesome. Of course, we can cultivate that ability through meditation, choosing empowered responses to challenges, and other practices throughout our day. Charles tells us that another powerful way to shape our ability to focus is by actively constructing mental models throughout our day, by telling ourselves stories about what's happening in our lives and thinking through upcoming episodes. One of the scientists Charles interviewed for this book was Timothy Pischel. Tim is one of the world's leading motivational researchers. We covered his great book, Solving the Procrastination Puzzle. You can see those notes plus interview. He has something called if-then intentions that are super effective for dealing with procrastination. Here's how he puts it, quote, in short, implementation intentions are a powerful tool to move from a goal intention to an action. These implementation intentions take the form of if-then statements. The if part of the statement sets out some stimulus for action. The then portion describes the action itself. The issue here really is one of pre-decision. We are trying to delegate the control over the initiation of our behavior to a specified situation without requiring conscious decision. If I say to myself things like, I'll feel more like doing this later, or I don't feel like doing this now, then I will just get started on some aspect of the task, end quote. Those implementation intentions are really just another way to build mental models and discipline our minds to go where we want, when we want. For example, we can just swap out the if with when and run the mental model. When I'm in my next meeting, then I'll do X, Y, and Z. As you're driving home from work, you can tell yourself a story about how you'll interact with your family. When I get home, I'm going to enjoy hanging out with the fam. I'll put my smartphone in airplane mode and out of sight and enjoy doing X, Y, and Z. If my kids do this, then I'll do that. See it. Feel it. Actively construct it in your mind. Narrate your life as it's happening. As you anticipate what's next, you build more and more control over the spotlight of your attention, cultivating the ability to shine it brightly right where you want, when you want. Next big idea, stretch plus smart. Quote, the reason why we need both stretch goals and smart goals is that audaciousness on its own can be terrifying. It's often not clear how to start on a stretch goal. And so, for a stretch goal to become more than just an aspiration, we need a disciplined mindset to show us how to turn a far-off objective into a series of realistic short-term aims. People who know how to build smart goals have often been habituated into cultures where big objectives can be broken down into manageable parts, And so when they encounter seemingly outsized ambitions, they know what to do. Stretch goals paired with smart thinking can help you put the impossible within reach. End quote. That's from my favorite chapter of the book, Goal Setting. Of course, at this stage, we're all familiar with SMART goals, all caps, and we've heard of stretch goals. But I love the way Charles connects the art and science of both. First, the challenges of each. SMART goals, specific plus measurable plus achievable plus realistic plus timeline, are effective at getting stuff done. But if all we have are SMART goals, we can fall into the dreaded checklist inertia where we get a lot of stuff done, but not the truly important stuff. Stretch goals are awesome in getting us to dream about what's possible and go after our big, hairy, audacious goals. But if they're not grounded in next steps, they can overwhelm us. The trick? Put them together. Stretch plus smart equals wise goal setting. Let's look at this a little more with our next big idea. Dominoes equals proximal goals. Quote, so one solution is writing to-do lists that pair stretch goals and smart goals. Come up with a menu of your biggest ambitions. Dream big and stretch. Describe the goals that, at first glance, seem impossible, such as starting a company or running a marathon. Then choose one aim and start breaking it into short-term concrete steps. Ask yourself, what realistic progress can I make in the next day, week, month? How many miles can you realistically run tomorrow and over the next 3 weeks? What are the specific short-term steps along the path to bigger success? What timeline makes sense? Will you open your store in 6 months or a year? How will you measure your progress? Within psychology, these smaller ambitions are known as proximal goals, and repeated studies have shown that breaking a big ambition into proximal goals makes the large objective more likely to occur. End quote. Proximal goals. We now have this scientific phrase for our dominoes strategy. Gary Keller captured our dominoes strategy in The One Thing. See those notes where he tells us, by thinking through the filter of goal setting to the now, you set a future goal and then methodically drill down to what you should be doing right now. It can be a little like a Russian doll in that your one thing right now is nested inside your one thing today, which is nested inside your one thing this week, which is nested inside your one thing this month. It's how a small thing can actually build up to a big one. You're lining up your dominoes. So let's line up your dominoes. Start with your number one stretch goal that fires you up these days. Stretchy sauce equals what? Fill in the blank. Now, let's break that down into more bite-sized, smart, proximal, slash sub-goal chunks, or dominoes. This is my next little mini-goal I can hit in the shorter term en route to that big, exciting goal. What is it? Now, break that down into more sub-goals until you get to today. Identify your proximal goals, line up your dominoes, then go knock over the next one. Repeat. Next big idea, the key to learning, disfluency. Quote, the people who are most successful at learning, those who are able to digest the data surrounding them, who absorb insights embedded in their experiences and take advantage of information flowing past, are the ones who know how to use disfluency to their advantage. They transform what life throws at them rather than just taking it as it comes. They know the best lessons are those that force us to do something and to manipulate the information. They take data and transform it into experiments whenever they can. Whether we use the engineering design process or test an idea at work or simply talk through a concept with a friend, by making information more disfluent, we paradoxically make it easier to understand. End quote. That's from the final chapter of Absorbing Data, in which Charles walks us through some fascinating stories about how a school in Cincinnati went from worst to first via understanding data. It's truly fascinating and inspiring stuff. Let's look at one of the keys to learning, disfluency. Paradoxically, by making things harder, we optimize our learning. Here's how the Make It Stick guys, see those notes, put it in their great book. They say, quote, learning is deeper and more durable when it's effortful. Learning that's easy is like writing in sand, here today and gone tomorrow. We are poor judges of when we are learning well and when we're not. When the going is harder and slower and it doesn't feel productive, we are drawn to strategies that feel more fruitful unaware that the gains from these strategies are often temporary, end quote. So get this. Did you know that research shows people learn better when they handwrite their notes during a lecture rather than type them? Yep, it's harder to write your notes than type them. The disfluency enhances learning. Another really important way to integrate data is to explain it to someone else, which is hard to do. Disfluency. Here's how Barbara Oakley puts it in her classic manual on how to learn, A Mind for Numbers. See those notes on that great book. She says, quote, "The legendary Charles Darwin would do much the same thing. When trying to explain a concept, he imagined someone had walked into his study. He would put his pen down and try to explain the idea in the simplest terms. That helped him figure out how he would describe the concept in print. Along those lines, the website reddit.com has a section called Explain Like I'm Five, where anyone can make a post asking for a simple explanation of a complex topic. You may think you really have to understand something in order to explain it, but observe what happens when you are talking to other people about what you are studying. You'll be surprised to see how often understanding arises as a consequence of attempts to explain to others and yourself rather than the explanation arising out of your previous understanding. This is why teachers often say that the first time they really understood the material was when they had to teach it," end quote. The key there, engage with what you learn. Charles tells us, quote, "In our own lives, the same lesson applies. When we encounter new information and want to learn from it, we should force ourselves to do something with the data. It's not enough for your bathroom scale to send daily updates to an app on your phone. If you want to lose weight, force yourself to plot those measurements on graph paper, and you'll be more likely to choose a salad over a hamburger at lunch. If you read a book filled with new ideas, force yourself to put it down and explain the concepts to someone sitting next to you, and you'll be more likely to apply them to your life. When you find a new piece of information, force yourself to engage with it, to use it in an experiment or describe it to your friend. And then you will start building the mental folders that are at the core of learning," end quote. That leads us to our final big idea, productivity equals choices. Quote, "What's most important throughout all these concepts is the foundational idea undergirding these lessons, the tissue that connects the eight insights at the heart of this book. Productivity is about recognizing choices that other people often overlook. It's about making certain decisions in certain ways. The way we choose to see our own lives, the stories we tell ourselves, and the goals we push ourselves to spell out in detail, the culture we establish among teammates, the ways we frame our choices and manage the information in our lives. Productive people and companies force themselves to make choices most other people are content to ignore. Productivity emerges when people push themselves to think differently," end quote. Productivity all comes down to choices. Not the huge, life-changing ones, the itty-bitty, tiny ones we make day in and day out. Finding those little opportunities to enhance our performance by 4%. So, what choices will you make today? Here's to having fun choosing wisely as we get a little smarter, faster, and better. Charles Duhigg is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter for the New York Times and the author of The Power of Habit. He is a winner of the National Academies of Sciences, National Journalism, and George Polk Awards. A graduate of Harvard Business School and Yale College, he lives in Brooklyn with his wife and two children. You can connect with him, Charles Duhigg, that's with two G's, Duhigg.com. If you like this note, I think you'll also enjoy the notes on The Power of Habit by Duhigg, Mindset, Self-Theories, Make It Stick, and Solving the Procrastination Equation. Now, let's enjoy some great quotes from the sidebar and wrap it up. Charles tells us, "Productivity, put simply, is the name we give our attempts to figure out the best uses of our energy, intellect, and time as we try to seize the most meaningful rewards with the least wasted effort. It's a process of learning how to succeed with less stress and struggle. It's about getting things done without sacrificing everything we care about along the way." In addition to having audacious ambitions and plans that are thorough, we still need occasionally to step outside the day-to-day and consider if we're moving toward goals that make sense. We still need to think. Charles tells us, "In the age of automation, knowing how to manage your focus is more critical than ever before." There is a fine line between an ambition that helps people achieve something amazing and one that crushes morale. For a stretch goal to inspire, it often needs to be paired with something like the SMART system. In short, we need stretch and SMART goals. It doesn't matter if you call them by those names. It's not important if your proximal goals fulfill every SMART criterion. What matters is having a large ambition and a system for figuring out how to make it into a concrete and realistic plan. And finally, every choice we make in life is an experiment. Every day offers fresh opportunities to find better decision-making frames. All life is an experiment, Ralph Waldo Emerson tells us. The more, the better. And all life is one choice after another. Let's make some wise ones today. What was your favorite idea? What jumped out and landed, most resonated for you? Think about it, implement it, and have another awesome day. Appreciate your support. Look forward to sharing more soon. See ya.
We hope you enjoyed this Philosopher's Note. Please go to brianjohnson.me to download more.